We're holding on Lamed Dalet Amud Beis, a little bit past the middle of the Amud. The line begins Acheres. We're in the middle of talking about the Meraglim. We said that the Kalev went specifically to Hebron, to the Maris Machpelah. Well, all of them went to in the area of Hebron because they went to Nachal Eshkol, which is near Hebron. But Kalev specifically made a detour to go to the Maris Machpelah to daven, to ask the others to help him to daven to Hashem that he should be saved from following the Meraglim. So continuing on that, the Pasuk says, V'shom Achimon Sheisha V'salma V'gomer, there in Hebron were located the three big giants, the brothers, Achimon Sheisha and Talmai V'gomer. So why were they called that? Achimon was called Miyumon Sheve'echav. He was the strongest and the most capable of his brothers. So Achimon, in other words, is short for Och, and Yomon, which means the strongest. Sheshai is called Shemesim Sa'oritz Kishchisus. Sheshai is so called because he made the land, he destroyed the land wherever he walked, because Rashi explains it was very big and very heavy, so like you'd have craters and holes in the ground everywhere he walked. So how does Sheshai have to do with Shchisus, other than the fact that they have a shin? Rashi says, I don't know. But then Rashi says maybe what it is, it's related, the word Sheshai would be related to Amudei Shesh, marble pillars. The same way, you put marble pillars on the ground, you'll see afterwards a noticeable hole in the ground, the same way wherever he walked was the same way. And Talmai was named that, Shemesim, or Tlomim, Tlomim, because wherever he walked on the ground, it made furrows in the ground, again, because it was very big and very heavy, and therefore he dug up the ground very deeply as he walked. The point of this being, in other words, that even though you have these giants over there, Kalev wasn't afraid of them, as opposed to the other Meraglim, which we're going to say later on, that they were afraid of them. The Gemara continues, Dover Achor, another explanation of the names. Achimon Bona Anos, Achimon built the city of Anos, Sheshai Bona Olush, Sheshai built a city called Olush, Talmai Bona Talbush, and Talmai built a city called Talbush. There are Mephoshim who said that the Dover Achor doesn't belong over here, it's not really a separate explanation. And Rashi himself, in fact, in Yomav says that you shouldn't have Dover Acher, and so we're not really saying this is not a separate explanation. We're just saying here, I want to tell you something else that these giants accomplished. Each of them founded an entire city. The Pasuk calls them Yelidei HaAnok, the ones who were born to the Anok. So of course, the simple meaning of Anok is giant. But the Gemara explains why are they called Anok? Shema Nikin Chama B'Kemosan. The word anok basically means a necklace, so they necklaced the sun with their height. In other words, they were so tall, it looked as though the sun in the sky is hanging around their necks like a necklace. So again, the point is, they were big giants, and yet Kalev wasn't afraid of them, whereas the other Meraglim were. Much later, we learned yesterday that he was given Hebron as his portion in Eretz Yisrael in token of that, and the Pasuk makes a point of mentioning in Sefer Yoshua and Shoftim that in fact he defeated and drove out those giants. He wasn't afraid of them at all.
Did these giants leave eventually Israel, or they were all killed? Because none of them.
Kalev afterwards, when he came to conquer that area, he dispossessed them from there. So does that mean he killed them? Does that mean he forced them to leave the country? Doesn't say one way or the other, but the point is he cleared out Hebron of their presence, and now it's available for him and his descendants to settle.
So this is a lesson. This is a lesson to us that we should not be afraid of all the enemies that we have, and especially.
That is very true. That is indeed one of the lessons of the story of the Meraglim. Sure. Going on, the Pasuk describes what it says that Hebron, that Kalev had come to Hebron, and the Pasuk says, V'Hebron Sheva Shanim Nivnasa. The Pasuk continues, Hebron had been built 7 years before Tsoyan Mitzrayim. Tsoyan was at various times the capital of Egypt. It's a city nowadays, and then it's a ruins of a city, whatever, in the Nile Delta. So on the face of it, the Pasuk is saying that Hebron had been built 7 years before it. But the Gemara says, my Nivnasa. What do we mean exactly that it was built? Do you mean Nivnasa Mamash? Do we mean that it was actually literally built 7 years before Tzayan? The problem with that is, Efsha Odom Boina Bnais Bias Lebnoi Cotton Kodim Lebnoi Godel. Is it possible that a person would build a house or in this case, a city, for his young son before his older son. Now, the Pasuk says, the sons of Cham, the Kush, then Mitzrayim, then Port, and then the youngest is Canaan. So we would assume this, that we're saying that these cities of Tsoyan and Hebron were founded respectively. The Gemara is assuming that Canaan had it, the Gemara is assuming that Cham himself, the patriarch of that whole branch of humanity, was the one who helped his sons build them. So therefore, how would it happen that Soyan, which is in Mitzrayim, which belongs to the second son, would have been built after Hebron, which is in Eretz Canaan, which would belong to the fourth son? So it can't mean then that it was literally built 7 years before it. Ella, Shahosim of Vunal Echon Mishiva Betsoyan. What it means is that Hebron was built up. It was seven times as good as Soyan. It had, it had good fruit. Rashi says, we see that they got that huge cluster of grapes that we learned about yesterday, they got from Hebron. So we're saying that the fruit and the produce of Hebron was seven times as good as Tzoyan. Now, continues the Gemara, let's consider. There's no area of Eretz Yisrael that's more rocky land than Hebron, Mishum de Kabri Bashichli, because, or the word Mishum actually doesn't really belong, the fact is they use it to bury the dead. We see that the Maros Machpela is there, and the point is, because it's very rocky land, it's not really suitable to grow things, so therefore they use it as the burial grounds. There's also the idea elsewhere, the Gemara talks about how they carve out niches in the rock, and they bury the dead over there, so therefore the rocky land of Hebron is very well suited for that. Meanwhile, there's no better and more fertile land in that area of the world, at least, more than Eretz Mitzrayim, because we see that when the Torah talks about the fertility of Sdoim and that area before they were destroyed, it compares them to the garden of Hashem, to the land of Mitzrayim. Within Mitzrayim itself, there's no better quality land than Soyan. As the Pasuk describes, his ministers were in Soyan, talking about the kings of Yehuda and Yisrael, where they're sending their ministers on diplomatic missions to Egypt, and they're going to Soyan, the capital. So the capital, of course, is usually going to be located in the best part of the land. So therefore, that means that Soyan is the best within Mitzrayim itself, which is the best. And yet, even with all of that, the Pasuk is implying that Hebron Mavuna Echem Meshiva Betzoyan, that Hebron is built up and has better quality fruit seven times as much as Tzoyan. So in other words, the Pasuk is talking and telling us about the greatness of Eretz Yisrael, that even the worst areas of it, such as the rocky areas like Hebron, are still much better even than the best quality land in other places in the world. So the Gemara asks, "Hebron, Tirushim Havi? You're telling me that Hebron is dry, rocky soil? Vaksiv, you have later on when Avshalom is getting ready to start his revolt against David. We learned about this in Nazir. Vayehi miketz arba'im shana. After 40 years, where we learned in Nazir, that means 40 years since back when the time when the Jewish people had asked for a king in Shmuel's times. So now we're talking this is 35 or 36 years into David's reign. Vayomer Avshalom al Melech Elcham Navagamer. Avshalom says to the king, I want to go to Hebron to fulfill a neder that I have over there. He was using that as an excuse to be able to launch his rebellion over there. But Amr of Ivya v'itamer Rabbi Babachanan Shaholach Lavi Kvasim Mechevron. What was his excuse of going to Hebron? If it's just that he has to bring korbanos, he could have brought them anywhere. At that point, the Beis Hamikdash hadn't been built yet. It means he was saying, I want to go to Hebron to get sheep from there because there's good pasture land over there, and therefore the sheep there are very high quality. So we see that the land is not rocky. We see it's good fertile land. V'tanya, and in fact, we learn in a b'raisa, Elim Mimoyov, when it came to getting rams for korbanos, the best ones come from Moyov, and Kvasim Mechevron, and as far as young sheep, as far as lambs, the best ones come from Hebron. So we see that Hebron is not rocky soil, it's got good pasture land over there. So Gemara says, that's exactly it. Mina, that's exactly your answer. Ivy the Klisha Ara, because the topsoil is very thin, because in other words, there's a very thin layer of soil, and underneath it is rocks. Therefore, you can't really plant anything over there. But because of that, precisely because there's not much that you can plant over there, Adaraya, therefore that produces a lot of grass, because that grows easily in shallow soils. Vishraman Kinyana, and therefore the livestock that live over there become very fat from the grass, and therefore, yes, Hebron is a good place for raising animals, but that itself shows that it's not good farmland. It's only good pasture land. So, in fact, Marashah says that's also why, during the first years when David was king over Shevet Yehuda before the other Shevatim accepted him, his capital was in Hebron. Like, so to speak, they wouldn't give him one of the better areas of Eretz Yisrael. They let him take over only a rocky area like that and make it his capital. Anyway, the point is that we see that Hebron is one of the less desirable areas of Eretz Yisrael, and still we're saying that it's better than Soyan, the capital of Mitzrayim. Getting back to the Meraglim, the Pasuk says, Yeshuvu Mitur Ha'aretz. The Pasuk says they return from spying out the land, and then Vayelchu Vayavayu. The Pasuk says they went and they came. So why does it have to say that they went? That we know already they went. So Amar Rabbi Yechanan, Meshum Rabbi Shimon Yochai, Makish Halicha L'Bia. The Pasuk is comparing their going to their coming. Ma Bia Be'etzara, just like when they came, when they came back, they had bad ideas, and they're speaking Lashon Hara about Eretz Yisrael. Halicha Be'etzara, the same way already when they left, they already had that bad idea that they planned to come back with a bad report. The Rashi says on the Pasuk, Ba'usa Shor K'sherim Hoyu, that when Moshe picked them, they were K'sherim, but the point is, right after that, as soon as they left, they already started going bad. You have the innumerable places in Chassidus where it talks about that the deeper idea was that as we mentioned yesterday, that they didn't want to have to give up the ruchnius of their life in the desert for the gashmiistic life in Eretz Yisrael, and therefore already as soon as they left, they're thinking about that, about how we're going to convince the people to go along with us to give up the idea of settling in Eretz Yisrael. So therefore it says Vayelchu Vayavoyu in token of that. Next, so they came back. The pasuk says Vayisapru Loi Vayomru. They told over to Moshe and they said Bonu Vagomer. We came to the land and Zavas Chol Vadash. Now all of that is true. Uchtiv, and then they continue. The next pasuk Efes Ki Aza On Vagomer. However, the people are very strong and so forth. So Amar Rav Yechanan, says that we see from this, and the Gemara interjects with a simon, emes levada levia. This is a simon for statements of Rav Yechanan that are scattered throughout from here to the rest of the Masechta. Three statements in Agadta that Rav Yechanan made. Emes is a key word from over here about Dvar Emes. Levadoi, or really it's supposed to be Lochdoi, is something on Membeis and Mabeis, about in the story of Goliath. And Levia is later on Daf Mem Vav Mem Zayin, when we talk about the importance of Levia, of accompanying a guest when he leaves. Anyway, so Rav Yechanan says, Mishum Rav Meir, in the name of Rav Meir, Kol Lashon Hara she'ein ba dvar emes b'chilosei, any Lashon Hara that doesn't have a little bit of truth at the beginning of it, ein miskayim b'soifei, it won't last at the end, because nobody's going to believe him at all. So therefore, the point is, they had to start, because then everybody realizes they're just liars. So therefore, a person, when he starts lying, he says a little bit of truth first, so people will believe him. The same way the Meraglim, why did they begin by talking about the fertility of Eretz Yisrael, if the whole point is they want to badmouth it? Because they knew they have to say something truth in order to get people to listen to them. Next, the pasuk continues, Vayahas Kolev as the Amel Moshe. Kolev quieted the people down to Moshe. So what does that mean by El Moshe? What does that mean to Moshe? So, Omer Rabashi, Sisan Bidvarim, he tricked them with words, or he induced them to listen to him with words. Meaning, what had happened was, Posach Yeshua to Kamishtoi. First, after the 10 Meraglim had started saying evil about Eretz Yisrael, Yeshua wanted to speak up, and Yom wanted to start speaking up and telling them that no, the Meraglim are wrong. Amrilei, but the people said about Yeshua, Dein Reish Ktia Yamalo, should this one with the cut off head speak? Now, why are they calling him a person with a cut off head? So Rashi explains, Yeshua has no sons. We find in the Gemara in Megillah that he didn't have sons, he had only daughters. At that point, they didn't know, this is long before Bnos Tzlafad, so nobody knew daughters are going to inherit in Eretz Yisrael. As far as they knew, anybody who has no sons, that's it, he's not going to get a Nachla at all. So they were saying, like, Yeshua has no future over here anyway, so why should we bother listening to him? We're concerned about that we have sons and we want to inherit us. He has nothing to be concerned about. Of course he's going to say whatever he's going to say. We don't have to listen to him. The Aruch gives a different explanation that the Yeshua's name, we said before, he was named from Hosea to Yeshua, so they're making fun of the fact that Moshe added a letter Yud to his name, which is like a tiny little cut-off letter. Marsha says both of those are a little bit of a doichik, and he says that the vote is that they're saying basically that you weren't appointed by Hashem like the rest of us, like the rest of us Medagvin. You were only appointed by Moshe Rabbeinu. So therefore, you're on a lesser level than us, and you have no business talking. And then there are Mepharshim who understand that it has to do. I think Ben Yehoyada maybe talks about that. We know that Bnei Ephraim had left Mitzrayim 30 years early, and many of them got killed. Yeshua is also from Shevet Ephraim, so like they're accusing him that he's trying to do the same thing all over again, get them into Eretz Yisrael prematurely.
One thing is, even though he used this trick, the other Meraglim knew that he was against them. He wasn't.
One second, no, that's the point. They didn't know that Kohler was against them. That's what we're going to get. Yeshua, fine. That's what I was saying. Yeshua first started speaking. But they knew already that,
I don't mean they saw. I'm talking about the other Meraglim know that he wasn't.
Not necessarily. Not necessarily. Wait. So they made fun of Yeshua. They called him Rosh Ktia, the cut off head, and they wouldn't let him speak. Omar, so now Kohler thinks to himself, if I start speaking up, then they're going to say something against me, and they'll tell me to be quiet also. Then Yoyada says, for example, they're going to claim, for example, that when I was in Hebron alone, with the giants over there, that they gave me bribes to convince the Jews to go into Eretz Yisrael, where the giants then can defeat them. So
Alexander.
Yeah.
Were Yeshua and Caleb fearful for their lives?
Later on, the Pasuk says that the people were threatening to stone them, and then Hashem's Shina appeared. We're going to quote that Pasuk soon in the Gemara. At this point, the Pashtus, we're not talking about that they had what to fear for their lives yet. Anyway, so Caleb says, I have to do a trick in order to get everybody to listen to them, to me. So he calls out, Ben Amram. Do you think this is the only thing that Ben Amram did for us? They thought that Kolev plans to also say something derogatory against Moshe. After all, when they call him Ben Amram, is usually they mean in a derogatory sense. And then once he had them quiet, Ishtiku, so they quieted down to hear what he has to say. He says to them, no, what do you mean? Just the opposite. Moshe took us out of Mitzrayim, but Korolon was a yam, he split the sea for us, then Chelon was a man, he gave us the man to eat. So we should know that he always is looking out for our best interests. Even if he tells us we have to make ladders and climb up to heaven, shouldn't we listen to him? So he continues. We will indeed go up and we will conquer it. So even if we have to go up to Shemayim, we will be able to go up and we'll be able to do it because we have Moshe telling us what to do and we know that he knows what he's talking about. So that's what it means by Yas Kolav Moshe, that he used that trick. Now you're saying the Meraglim maybe knew he's not on their side. Not necessarily. That's Rashi makes a point in a few places in Pesukim that Kolav pretended outwardly to be on their side. Inwardly, he was planning how to avoid them, and that's why he went to Hebron and Davin, but they didn't know about all that.
He wasn't taking
with the fruit, because the Gemara we learned yesterday in the Gemara, he was chashuv.
Why would he rather say that he's not there? He was appointed only by Shabbat.
That was Yeshua. But Yeshua, anyway, whatever, we had the different explanations why they called him Rishon Tzion, but yeah. Anyway. The pasuk continues. The other men who went with him, the other 10 meraglim, said, "Lo amru." They said, "Lo nuchav agamer." We won't be able to go into Eretz Yisrael. He chazaku mimenu, because he's stronger than us. But Amar Rav Chanina bar Papa, "Davar gadol medibru meraglim ba'oseshah." The meraglim said a tremendous statement, a serious statement at that point against Hashem. When they said, "Ki chazaku mimenu, al tikur mimenu ela mimenu." When it says mimenu, it doesn't just mean from us, it also means then him. So in other words, they're saying that Kavyachol, the nations in Eretz Yisrael, are stronger than Hashem. Kav Yochel, Afila Balabais, any Yochel, Lahoti, Kayla Misham, that so to speak, even the Balabais, even Hashem, wouldn't be able to get his utensils out of there because they would overpower him. Now Rashi says, what kind of altikri? The word mimenu is pronounced the same, whether it means from him or from us. So therefore Rashi says, not really an altikri. We just mean, in other words, the Gemara is pointing out that when they say kichazakum mimenu, it has a double meaning. With that said, there are Rishonim who do accept the Girsa Mimet, who do accept the Girsa Altikri, and they understand that maybe, in fact, the two words are pronounced slightly differently. One has a Dugish in the Nun, the other doesn't. There's some discussion about this among the Medaktikim, among the Bale Diktuk, about the details of that. Lamaisa, we have in our Chumashim, we have the word that both words Mimenu are indeed punctuated and pronounced exactly the same. What do they mean? What do they mean? How could they think that the nations are stronger than Hashem? So here's where you come to the thing in the Chassidus about the Torah and I mean, the Kodesh Torah and later Svarim, about that they figured that going into Eretz Yisrael was going to compromise their Ruchnius, and even Hashem wouldn't be able to save them from that.
I was going to say that instead of the men, us 10, 11, because we're not going to be the ones that can build the
Ruchnius. Well, there was that also.
Hashem was going to send other people.
No. Right, but no, they weren't.
That. Say that.
Yeah. Next, they continued, they said more Lashon Hara about Eretz Yisrael. Eretz Echeles Yeshverhi. They said it's a land that devours the people who live in it. So what happened? Again, we have to assume that they're basing themselves on something. They're not just making something out of whole cloth. So Dorash Rava, Omar Rava, means that Hashem is, Dorash Rava, Omar Kodesh Baruch Hu. When Hashem hears them saying this, Hashem says, Ani Chashavti Ovatova. I plan things for their good. They instead are thinking that it's something bad. I planned it for good, meaning, yes, they did see people dying wherever they went, but the purpose of it is, wherever in Eretz Yisrael they're traveling and they're going from one end to the other, an important person in that area would die, right? So that way they'll be busy, so that way they won't be inquiring what are these strange people coming, grasshopper like people or whatever, what are these strange people coming and then looking around. So I was doing it for their good in order to protect them. Or the Ikada Amri, others say that it wasn't just one person, that it wasn't just individual people here and there in Eretz Yisrael, but rather Eov Noch Nafshe, that specifically Eov passed away at that point. And so everybody is busy with the Hesped because Eov was very well known and famous. So in any case, the point is, Hashem arranged that there would definitely be people dying, either individual people or the one person Eov Maharsha points out, the fact is that, for example, so they're saying there are the giants and we can't conquer them, and Kolev answers back, no, we can, Ole Nala. Whereas when they're saying, Achelos Yeshverhi, we don't see Yeshua and Kolev responding to that. Because the fact is, it was true. Objectively, it was true. They did see people dying. Just Hashem is saying that I planned it for the good, and the Meraglim are taking it the wrong way.
At that point, they weren't giving him any more the mic because they.
No, even so, they would later on. They were afterwards. Yeshua and Kolev were still able to say later on, Toba Eretz Moed Moed in Chofetz Banu Hashem a few psukim later. So yeah, they would have managed to. But yeah.
From here we know we can see that the point of this judge, the Eves wasn't the Eves.
Right, so, right. There are different opinions about it in Baba Basra, when he lived, whether he was a Yid or not, and yeah, the Gemara mentions over there one opinion that he was in the time of Moshe, and yeah, we have a lot of ground to cover actually. So let's see. So that was the purpose. Hashem said why I made that happen. Heim chosh v'lora. And meanwhile, they're taking it badly and claiming Eretz Echelos Yeshverhi, that Eretz Yisrael devours its inhabitants. In other words, that it's a dangerous land. Again, Beruchnius, there's also the idea of Echelos Yeshver, that they're saying it eats people up Beruchnius, like in other words, we're not going to be able to keep our high Ruchniustical level, we're going to get meshed in the Gashmius of Eretz Yisrael, plowing and planting and whatnot, but yeah. They go on to say, they said, we were in our own eyes like grasshoppers, and we also appeared that way in their eyes. So what are they saying by that? So the Mishalshi said, in that the Meraglim are outright lying. That they can say we felt like grasshoppers is true. They could say that they felt like that. What do you mean we looked like that in their eyes? How could they possibly know that the people in Eretz Yisrael think of them like grasshoppers? Therefore, the Mishalshi says they must have been lying. However, the Gemara says, that's actually not so. They did have solid evidence of it because We just said that there were Avelim all over Eretz Yisrael, either for individual people or for Eos. So people were eating a Surah Savra, they were eating the first meal that Avelim eat. They were eating Tusi Arzi under cedar trees. Havamavri is where they were eating. So now when the Meraglim would see the giants sitting under the trees and eating, there was Sokol Yosef of Ilani, they would climb up and hide in the trees so that the giants don't see them. And Shami de Kaamri, and they overheard the giant saying, Kachazin and Inshi de Domul Kamsi de Ilani, we see little grasshopper shaped, we see little people shaped grasshoppers in the trees. So we see that literally they did think that the Meraglim are tiny, like little grasshoppers compared to them. So it was in fact true that they were saying that, but still they're taking the wrong conclusions from it. The pasuk continues. Vatisa kol ha'eder vayitnu eskolam. The entire congregation, when they heard what the meraglim said, they lifted up their voices. Vayivku, and they cried. So what happened? Amar Rav Rabbanah, Amar Rav Yechon, Oisa hayom erev Tisha B'Av haya. That day was erev Tisha B'Av. There are different gemaras over here whether we have the word erev or not. The point is the meraglim came back on the 8th of Av. Elsewhere the Gemara calculates in the Sefer Tainis they left on the 29th of Sivan. It says they took 40 days. So therefore you have the Gemara explains over there. He had 2 days of Sivan, the 29th and 30th of Sivan. That year, Tammuz was 30 days, where normally in most years, Tammuz is 29. So that gives us another 30. So by the time it comes to the end of Tammuz, so far they're 32 days into the mission. They had another 8 days. They came back on the 8th of and that night was when everybody was crying. Even though they said they had fritz l'derech, Rabbi Rashi says that by rights it should have taken them much longer. They had to go the length and width of Eretz Yisrael. By rights it would have taken them much longer, but Hashem caused them to hurry up so that way the Jewish people don't have to stay in the desert more than 40 years. Anyway, Omer HaKadosh Baruch Hu, Hein Vachu B'chiyah Shel Chinam, Hashem says on this night they cried for nothing because they're falsely claiming that it's dangerous to go into Eretz Yisrael. V'ani Ekvalahem B'chiyah L'Doris, Hashem says I'm going to set up for them a crying in all future generations. As midah keneged midah for that, and to take a lesson, never to speak badly about Eretz Yisrael, and never to doubt Hashem. Marashah points out, you actually have that. It says quite clearly in Tillim, in Kapitel Kofei, the Pasuk says, when it describes how they rejected Eretz Yisrael, vayimasu be'eretz chemda, and the Pasuk continues, vayisa yodah lahem, Hashem raised up his hand and swore that they were going to die in the desert, and lahapol zaram bagoyim, that their children are going to be killed among the nations and be scattered among the different lands representing the Churban and the Golus. So therefore, so right at that time, Hashem decided that it's going to be like that. And it goes on to show how you have hints to it in the Psukim in Shlach already, that's how it's going to be. So that's what we're saying, that Hashem set that up. That night is going to be the night of crying for many future generations of the Jewish people. Next, the pasuk says, "Vayomer kol ha'eder lugam oisam ba'avonim." The pasuk says the entire congregation were thinking to stone, to pelt Kolev and Yeshua with stones. And then the pasuk continues, "Uchvoid Hashem nira ba'oyamoyed." The glory of Hashem appeared in Oyamoyed, and then the cloud descended over there, and everybody realized that Hashem is watching, and they stopped.
You can see that, the glory?
Yeah, that's the bit. But now, Omer Abchiva Abba, Abchiva Abba says, the fact that it says, Vod Hashem, in the same posset as Luga Moisim Ba'avonim, that teaches, Malamach and Not Lavonim, Vizokum Klapim Maila. Means the people were picking up stones and throwing them up above. In other words, that they were, so to speak, thinking of stoning Hashem as well, not just Kolev and Yeshua, because that's how worked up they were. Next, so the pasuk goes on to talk about how Hashem was threatening to destroy the Jewish people and Moshe Davin for them, etc., etc. And then at the end it says, the people who spoke badly about the land died in a plague. Now, Rashi explains, since it doesn't say, usually if it means they die in a plague, it would say bimagefa, in a plague. Here it says bamagefa, which means in the plague. So what's the plague? So Amr of Shimon Lakish Shemesu Misim Meshuna means they died an unnatural death, that Hashem specifically set up an unusual kind of death for them. So Tosfos explains that differently, that since the Pasuk says that they died, the Pasuk says they spoke badly about Eretz Yisrael, and they died by Magepha, and the word in the Pasuk, Ra'al, which means bad, speaking about the bad that they spoke, is right next to the word by Magepha, so we also understand that it means they died in a bad plague, and it was an unnatural kind of plague. So what was it? We learn from this that the plague was their tongues were extended outward, and it went, their tongue extended all the way to their navel, to their belly button. Worms were coming out of their tongues and going into their navel. And then back from the navel, back to the tongue, and they died that way. So it was an unusual punishment for the fact that tongues because they spoke Lashon Hara, and the navel because they spoke badly about Eretz Yisrael, just like the navel is the middle of the body, the Gemara mentions in various places that the Eretz Yisrael is the navel, is the center of the world. So therefore, since they spoke badly about Eretz Yisrael, so therefore, in fact, you have a pasuk in Yechezkel that refers to Eretz Yisrael as Tabor Earth, the navel of the world. So therefore, so Ion Yaakov explains that was why Dafka they were punished involving their navels. And the Rif in Ein Yaakov makes a different point, where before a baby is born, he gets his nourishment through his navel, through his umbilical cord. So Hashem was hinting to them that it would have been better if they hadn't been born in the first place, and they continued to get their nourishment that way, because now, like this, they really messed up. Anyway, that was the punishment they had. That's according to one opinion. But Rav Nachman Yitzchok says that no, they died of Askura, which is it's a throat disease, it's a throat inflammation. The Gemara mentions it in various places in Shas. It was very feared in their times as a dangerous disease where the person basically chokes on something, on a growth in their throat. In various places, Rashi translates it as a swelling or something in the throat. Yes, I mean, that's a disease called diphtheria. Nowadays it's one of the things that they have regular childhood vaccines for, but back then it was considered a very dangerous disease.
Is that also in the parsha with cursing Eden?
Yeah, it mentions it in many different places, but Rashi explains that the Gemara in Shabbos tells us that it's the specific punishment for Bali Lashon Hara. They speak badly with their mouth and their throat, and therefore they're punished in that way. So since they spoke Lashon Hara, then Nachman Yitzchok is learning that that's the punishment they got. All right, finish it. Now that we finished with the Meraglim, now we're getting back to, we digressed to the Meraglim because we were talking about the stones that they took out of the Yarden. We said how heavy each of those stones were, and then we compared it with the weight of the cluster of grapes the Meraglim took, and that got us into this whole discussion about the Meraglim. So now, getting back to the crossing of the Yarden. We said, but Kivin Sha'olah Achman should be Sermon Yarden. So before we said what happened was, so the Koyanim were carrying the Aron. They first put their feet into the Yarden, and the Yarden split, and everybody crossed. So now what happened? Now what happened after they finished crossing? The Kivin Sha'olah Achman should be Sermon Yarden. As soon as the last Jew left the bed of the Yarden, right away, the water returned to its regular place and continued flowing like normal. Shenema, as the pasuk says, as the Koyanim who are carrying the Aron of the covenant of Hashem went up from the Yarden, the feet of the Koyanim had just moved out of the Yarden onto the dry land. Then the water of the Yarden returned to their regular place, and they continued flowing through between their banks just like the day before and the day before that.
So this is two different times in the water split. Almost
no, one time that the water split. As soon as the Koyanim stepped their feet into the Yarden, the water split. Now we're saying, as soon as all the Jewish people had left the Yarden, and the Koyanim also leave the Yarden, then the river moved, then the water came back, all the water that piled up before, that flowed backward, that we learned about yesterday, all came rushing back, and the water continued flowing like normal.
So when they went on the side?
We're talking about when they entered Eretz Yisrael, in Yeshua's times.
Oh, second, because this is the second.
Yeah. So Nimsa, now, so it comes out, since the earlier Psukim are saying that the Koyanim had just gone into the Yarden, implying that they're still standing by the eastern side of the Yarden. And now when it says that their feet went onto the dry land, we're understanding that it means they stepped backward from where they were. So Nimsa, it comes out, Oren Venosa of Koyanim Tzadefad, it comes out, the Oren and the ones who are bearing it, the Koyanim, are standing on one side of the Yarden, the Yisroel, Mitzad Echad, the rest of the Jewish people, are standing on the other side. So in other words, Rashi explains, even though, so earlier it says all the people crossed, you could conceivably understand that it means the Kohanim also crossed with them and then went out on the west side, and then you don't need to talk about the nest that the Gemara is going to talk about the Aron carrying them, but Rashi explains the Gemara is understanding that it wasn't that way, Ein Muktum Uchavatora. After all, if the Kohanim and the Oren are supposed to be in front of the people, then what do you mean? The people left the Yaudin and then the Kohanim? It would have had to be the Kohanim leave the Yaudin first, and then the Jewish people. So therefore, we have to understand that it means that they were standing there by the eastern bank of the Yaudin, and when all the Jewish people had finished crossing, then they stepped backward. Now they're back on the east side. So now you have the river is flowing between them.
The
U-turn was by Chris Yamsov. No, here they crossed straight across. But the point is, in other words, that here's the river. The Kohanim had stepped into one side of the river, and then it split. Now they step backward onto the same side that they had started in. Meanwhile, the rest of the Jewish people had crossed. So what happened now? Nosa Oranus Nosa V'Ovar. At this point, the Oran picked up those who carry it and crossed. Because then the pasuk continues, after all the people had crossed, then it says, Vayavar Aron Aron Hashem, and the Oran of Hashem crossed over, implying that they flew over the Yaudin, the Oran carried the Kohanim with it across the Yaudin, and now they're able to rejoin the Jewish people and continue going ahead of them. As the pasuk says, after all the people had finished crossing, then the Oren of Hashem and the Kohanim passed before the people. Passed implies that they had to bypass all of them because all the people had already crossed and they were behind, and now they had to fly over in order to join them. And you should know, because of this, later on, a few hundred years later, Uzzah was punished. So you have the story in Sefer Shmuel, and also in Divrei Hayamim, it's after Parsha Shemini, when David is bringing the Aron the first time to Yerushalayim. So he had it brought on a wagon, which the Gemara is going to explain soon was a mistake. So meanwhile, at one point, Uzzah, who was accompanying the Aron, who was walking alongside, he thought the Aron is about to fall off the wagon. So he put out his hands to stop it, and he was punished. Shenema, Vayavoyu ad Gordon Kidoin. The pasuk says, when it describes the story in Divrei Hayamim, it says they came to the threshing floor of Kidon. The Gemara is going to explain soon why it was called that. By Yishrach Uzzah Yodel Lechazus Oren, Uzzah stretched out his hand to grab a hold of the Oren because he thought that it was going to fall. So what happens? Amalei Hakadosh Baruch Hu Uzzah Noisav Nasa. The Oren was able to carry the ones who carried it. Asma Lekosh. Again, you think it can't carry itself? You think it's in danger of falling? In the case of the Oren, you have to rely on Nissim, especially Mephoshim point out, Uzzah wasn't even a Kohen. If it was a Kohen, it would be one thing he has a legitimate right to touch the Oren, but not yet. So therefore, the pasuk continues by Yichar Af Hashem Be'Uzzah. Hashem was angry at Uzzah. And Hashem struck him down on the Shal. Now, what is Shal? Rabbi Yechon and Rabbi Elazar. Tad Omer al Iske Sholu. One says the word Shal is related to the word Sholu, meaning a mistake. He made the mistake of thinking he has to hold the Oren and steady it, and for that he was punished for that mistake. The other one says that he was punished because he went to the bathroom in front of it. The Rashi explains, pointed out, the word shal comes from a word that means to drop something. For example, you have the pasuk in the Tochacha that your olive trees won't produce their fruit normally. It'll drop off the tree prematurely. The same way, something dropped out of his body where it wasn't supposed to. Now, how could he be so chutzpah because to do that in front of the Aron? So one of the Mephoshim explains that no, what it means is he was so frightened that the Oren was about to fall that like he lost control of his natural functions. But still, in other words, the point is he should have still pulled himself together and not done that. So the Gemara says, the pasuk continues by Yomos Shom Im Aron HaElokim. He died there with the Oren. So on the face of it, it means exactly that he died there right next to the Oren. But the Gemara says, Amar Rabbi Yochanan, Amar Rabbi Yochanan, Uzzah ba la Olam Haba. You should know that even though Uzzah made that mistake, he still does have a place in Olam Haba. Shenema, Ima Aron Ha'alekim, because the pasuk says that he was with the Aron, implying Ma Aron La Olam Kaim, just like the Aron exists forever. It was hidden under the Beis Hamikdash, etc. Af Uza Ba La Olam Haba, the same way Uza exists forever, he didn't lose his place in Olam Haba despite this mistake of his. Why would we think he did? Because you would think that he did, that he didn't realize the kedusha of the Aron. He treated it disrespectfully. Was saying even he went to the bathroom in front of it. You would think that maybe he deserved to lose his place in Olam Haba. So therefore, that we're saying that no, that not so. Next, the pasuk continues by Yichal to David. David was very upset. That Hashem had made a breach in Uzzah by killing him. So what's this word? Vayichar, shenishtanu ponov kacharora, means David's face turned black like a loaf of bread that's baked directly on the coals. So in other words, he was very upset and very angry with himself that he had caused this, to happen. So the Gemara says, why are we doubting over there? Are you going to say every time in Tanakh where it says Vayichar means his face turned black? So why doubt over here? The answer is Hosn Ksiv Ach, Tochol Ksiv Ach. Because the difference is usually the word Vayichar in Tanakh usually comes with the word Ach. So literally the word Vayichar means to burn. So it means that Vayichar Ach means that his anger burned. Rashi, in a few places, explains the word Ach literally means the nose, because when a person is angry, his nostrils flare and smoke comes out of his nose, and therefore you can describe a person being angry or upset as Vayichar Ach. But here where it says Vayichar L'David, without the word Ach, therefore we're saying we darshin that it doesn't mean he became angry. What he become angry about means he was very embarrassed and very upset, to the extent that his face turned black from embarrassment.
David took his whole responsibility on
him. David took the responsibility, right. So, So Dorashu of him, if they man nanish David, why indeed was David punished that such a thing happened because of him? And now Uzzah was punished, what we mean, in other words, that David bears a responsibility for it. The reason is Ramesh Kodal of Divrei Torah Zmiras, because he called the words of Torah songs. Shenema, as he says in the Pasuk, Zmiras Halibikokecha, Beves Megurai, your laws of the Torah were songs to me in the places where I had to live temporarily, during all the time when he was running away from control, etc. So, what is this? The Divrei Torah, about which the Pasuk says you have to treat them seriously and constantly review them. If you even fold your eyes against them, meaning if you even blink, then you could lose them. You have to be focused on Torah the whole time. After Koda Osen Zmiras, and you're calling them Zmiras as though they're like just a song that you can just learn them casually and sometimes have Hesach Hadas. I'm going to cause you to stumble and to forget something that even children know. As the Pasuk says, that when the Nesiim gave wagons and oxen for transporting the Mishkan, Moshe didn't give any of them to Bnei Kohos, because the holy work is on them, that they have to carry the Kalim on their shoulders. The Iu asked by Galta. Meanwhile, David had made a mistake and brought it on a wagon. So therefore, Hashem is telling him that was caused that to happen because you spoke of the Torah disrespectfully and called it Zmiras. But Foshim on the Pesukim talk about what was David thinking. Maybe he thought that was only in the Midbar, not necessarily in future generations. In Tanya, in Kuntas Achron, the Altareba talks about the idea that calling the Torah Zmiras, whether there is a level of Torah that can be called Zmiras, but that's the chitzoniastika level of Torah. He should have been focusing more on the pinyastika level, and therefore for that he was made to forget something, where forgetting is also associated with chitzonias. When you feel that something is unimportant to you, it's outside of you, then you forget it, so therefore it all worked out that way.
They learned that when you just sing the Gemara and sing the Zmiras, it would help them remember it behind.
Yeah, you should learn what's Zmiras, but not call the Torah Zmiras. And the first thing Alter Rebbe says over there in that Kuntres Achron is the Zohar calls the Torah Shvach Adar Aiso Ronana, the praise of the Torah and its song. So we see there is an aspect of the Torah that can be called song, but the Alter Rebbe goes on to explain that the fact that every detail of Torah is a ruchniistic source for some detail of the world, but nevertheless, the wise David focusing on that, which is the katsoniistic aspect of Torah, rather than the pnimius that it's with Sonim of Chachmasa Shalakar's Baruch. Okay. Now that we talked of, so now the Gemara is going to digress further to talk about an earlier time when the Oren was transported. So why is David bringing the Oren to Yerushalayim? So the story before that was and you have also the pasuk is going to describe people who treated the Aron a little disrespectfully and were punished for it. So earlier you have the Plishtim have captured the Aron and destroyed Mishkan Shilai. They suffered terrible plagues for it. So then they finally put it on a wagon and sent it, seeing if it's going to go in the direction of the nearest Jewish settlement, Beis Shemesh, and sure enough, it came there. The Plishtim, by the way, there's nothing wrong with them putting on a wagon, because of course they don't have the Torah. For them, as far as they knew, that's the most respectful way to do it. David was saying should have known better. Anyway, so, Mephoshim do say, actually, though, that might be one basis for why David made the mistake. Maybe he thought, since already it was transported on a wagon from the Plishtim, then maybe it's not so bad to transport it on a wagon to Yerushalayim. Anyway.
He'll get his case back once.
Yeah, whatever, anyway. So now the Pasuk describes, after the Aron came to Beis Shemesh, the Pasuk says, Vayach ba'anshe Beis Shemesh, Hashem struck at the people of Beis Shemesh, he ra'u ba'aron, because they looked at the Aron. So the Gemara is asking, Shem de'ro'u vayach alekim, why should Hashem strike them just because they saw it? And what are they supposed to do? It's there on the wagon, and they put it on a rock, as the Pasuk goes on to say, how else could they do but look to it? So Rabbi Bo and Rabbi Lozer disagree what exactly they did wrong. Bad One says they were harvesting their wheat. The Pasuk says this is happening during the wheat harvest time, and they were barren. So in other words, the point is, instead of they should have, as soon as they see the Aron coming, they should stop their work and all stand there in respect to the Aron, and instead they're just continuing doing their normal work and just, yeah, we'll bow towards the Aron and then we'll get back to work. So they're treating the Aron a little disrespectfully. In which case, Rashi explained, the word ro'u implies there's a Lashon Bizoyim. We find the Pasuk in Shirashirim where the word is al-tir'uni, shani shachoras, don't look at me in a derogatory way, that I'm black skinned. So we see, in other words, that the word ro'u can mean to look disrespectfully. So one says they were doing that. They didn't interrupt their work for the honor of the Aron. The other one between Rabbi Bohu and Rabbi Loza says, Mili Nami Omer. Not only did they not interrupt their work, they also spoke in a chutzpitik way about the Aron. They said, Man Imriach Lahodi Imriach. Who got you angry that you didn't, who got you angry when you got angry and didn't even save yourselves from being captured by the Plishtim, and now, Uman Osa Aloch the Ephesus, and who came to you now to appease you? In other words, if they're making fun, like, oh, look at this, you know, all this time you were by the Plishtim and you couldn't even save yourself from being captured, and now all of a sudden you seem to have calmed down, and now you're back to us Jewish people, so they're, As is often the case with such Gemaras, we don't have to maybe say that they said such a literally chutzpahdik thing, but they said something that bedakos represents this point, that they're, like, you could imagine, you know, they might have been saying is something that we would consider very respectful. Wow, I can't believe the Plishtim captured the Aron, and now they had to let it go, and now it's back to us, and we're so happy about it. Gemara is, they're characterizing it as they should have spoken more respectfully. Anyway, so the pasuk continues. Vayach ba'om shivim ish v'chamishim elef ish. The pasuk says Hashem struck and killed among the people 70 people, 50,000 people. Now you actually have the Gemara over here has the word printed v'chamishim, which would then mean 50,000 plus 70. However, in the pasuk there's actually no vav. The pasuk says shivim ish v'chamishim elef ish. 70 people, 50,000 people. So what does that mean? Was it 70 or was it 50,000? So, as the Gemara says, Rabbi Bohu, Rabbi Lozer. Again, Rabbi Bohu and Rabbi Lozer disagree on what that means. Chab omer shivim ish hayu. One says that altogether only 70 people were killed in Beis Shemesh. B'chol echad v'echad shoko chamishim elef. But each one was the equivalent of 50,000 regular Jews. B'chadam chamishim elef hayu. The other one says there were 50,000 people were killed in the plague. B'chol echad v'echad shoko k'shivim Sanhedrin. And each one of them was equal in caliber to the 70 members of the Sanhedrin. So either way, it was a tremendous blow. They lost many great people, and therefore the pasuk goes on to say the people of Beis Shemesh realize they don't know how to treat the Aron with the proper respect, and they ask the people of Kiryas Yearim to take the Aron and bring it over there, and instead in Kiryas Yearim for the next 20 years until David brought it to Yerushalayim.
People know better.
The people in Kiryas Yearim, I guess they figured, know better how to treat the Aron more respectfully.
And they couldn't ask David.
The David wasn't David wasn't a David. Well, David was a young man at the time. This is David was like 17 or 18 years old at the time. It was long before he became king.
Who was
at this point? Shmuel was the leader of the Jewish people. So why didn't they ask him? It's a good question. I don't know. Okay. Now, getting back to David's attempt to bring the Aron, so the Pesukim describe where there after Uzzah was killed, then David realized we can't continue bringing it to Yerushalayim, so he brought it to the house of Oved Edom Hagiti, who was a Levi who lived in that area, and the Pesuk says that Hashem gave a special bracha to Oved Edom and his family. The Gemara tells us at the end of brachas that his wife and his eight married sons all each had sextuplets. They all had six babies, and therefore all of a sudden the family grew and all these people later on ended up serving in the Beis Mikdash. So now David realized it's time to continue the process and bring it to Yerushalayim, but this time we're going to do it the right way. This time he has the Kohanim carrying it on their shoulders. This is what we learned before. We said there were three times when the Kohanim carried the Aron, and the third one was Kshech Ziruhu the Mekoyim, when they brought it back to its place. So this is the beginning of that process. They bring it from Kiryas Yerushalayim to Yerushalayim, and eventually years later when Shlomo built the Beis Mikdash, and they brought it into the Kohanim Kodesh.
That family, when they covered it, they respected it.
So they respected it. They swept in front of it. Oved Edom swept in front of it and lit candles in front of it. And for that, Hashem benched him and his family. So the pasuk says, when the people who were carrying the Aron walked six steps, by Yizbach Shor Meri, then David brought as a korban an ox and a meri, which is a fattened ox. Now, the Uchtiv, on the other hand, in Divrei Yomim, when it tells the story, it says that they brought Shiva Parim v'Shiva Elim. They brought seven bulls and seven rams. So what is it? Are they bringing every six steps, or in Divrei Yomim doesn't say how many steps? And are they bringing bulls and fattened bulls, or are they bringing bulls and rams? So Amar Papa Bashmul, Al Kol Psiyo Psiya, by every single step, as the Kohanim were walking from Oved Edom's house to Yerushalayim, they brought Shor Meri, then they brought an ox and a fattened ox as korbanos. That's what it describes in the Psukim in Shmuel. And then Al Kol Sheish for Sheish Psiyas, and then for every six steps that they took, David brought Shiva Ponim, the Shiva Elim, then he brought seven bulls and seven rams. So therefore, so one pasuk is talking about what they did every step, and the other pasuk is saying what they did every six steps. It's a huge number of korbanos. Afterwards, the pasuk says that David gave out portions of the korbanos to all the Jews who had gathered over there, so you had to have a lot of korbanos for every person to be able to give them to get a portion. But yeah. So why after six steps? Mephoshim on the Pesukim explained that maybe what it was is the first time they'd only gone six steps and already the Uzzah had been punished because already then he touched the Aron, and therefore now when they walked six steps successfully, then David is very grateful to Hashem that there was no mishap, and therefore he brought korbanos. But Omelet of Chista, but Rav Chista says to the Papa Bashmuel, Im Kain Mileses Kol Eretz Yisrael Bamos. Then, if every single step they're shechting a Shor and a Meri, then the entire Eretz Yisrael is going to be filled with Bamos. Every single step of the way, there's going to be a Bama over there. El Omer Chista Al Kol Sheish for Sheish Psias. No, what it means is for every six steps that the Kohanim walked with the Aron, Shor and Meri, then David brought in gratitude a Shor and a Meri. And every six groups of six steps, every 36 steps, Shiva Parim, Shiva Elim, they brought seven bulls and seven rams. So he's saying not every step, but every sixth step, they're bringing korbanos, and then every 36th step, they brought extra large korbanos. So now the Gemara asks, Siv. Now in the Pasuk in Divrei Yomim, it describes that the original mishap when Uzzah was killed, it says happened at Kidon. It calls it the threshing floor of Kidon. Uchtiv Nochayn. On the other hand, in Sefer Shmuel, when it tells the story, it says that it was at the threshing floor of Nochayn. So what was it? Amar Abiyachan, but Chila Kidon, all of a sudden Nochayn. It was both. Originally, when the Aron first came there, and Uzzah was killed, it was like a Kidon, which means a spear, because Uzzah was killed. Later on, after it stayed in Oved Edom's house, and Hashem gave him brachas, again, that he had so many children and grandchildren, so he had brachas, so now it was Nochayn, now it was all proper, meaning, in other words, that Hashem benched them, and David realized the Aron is not dangerous if you handle it properly, and therefore he started bringing it to Yerushalayim again. Rashi brings also from Reb Menachem Reb Chelba, a Rishon who wrote some Pirushim on Tanakh, he says that Goren Nochayn actually refers to the Goren Aravna Hayavusi, the place where the Beis Mikdash was eventually built. And he has the gears to the opposite. originally it was Nachon, because the Mizbeach was built over there. Later on it was Kidon, where he explains the word Kidon is related to a word in that you find in Sefer Iyov for destruction. So in other words, it would mean, okay, the pasuk is hinting at the fact that originally they brought the Oren, in Shlomo's times, they brought the Oren to the Beis Mikdash, which was well established, but afterwards, unfortunately, that place was destroyed, the Beis Mikdash was destroyed. So the opposite of the Gersa we have here, Moshe points out, I mean, that doesn't really seem to fit, because what's the context? The context is we're talking about over here, bringing the Oren, from Kiryas Yearim, and from Obed Edom's house, to Yerushalayim, so the fact that the Beis Mikdash was later destroyed doesn't really seem to fit in here so much. Okay. Continuing with the Braises that we're quoting, again, we had digressed from the story of crossing the Yarden. We digressed to talk about how, since the Kohenim flew over the Yarden with the Oren, the same way Uzzah should have realized hundreds of years later that the Oren can steady itself, and he doesn't have to do it. So now, getting back to the crossing of the Yarden. So now, altogether, we said that Yoshua had told people to set up stones in the Yarden, and then they also took stones from the Yarden and set them up elsewhere. So the Braisa says, in Tseisa Ata Omer, it comes out, Shlosha Mine Avonim Hoyu. There were three types of stones, three times when stones were set up, 12 stones each. Echot Shehekim Moshe Be'eretz Moav, one monument of stones that Moshe set up in Eretz Moav, in Eber HaYarden, when he reviewed the Torah and taught it to the people in Shivim Loshen, Shenema Be'eber HaYarden Be'eretz Moav Hoyo Moshe Be'ev Vemer, In Eber HaYarden, in the land of Moav, Moshe began explaining the Torah, and it says there the word Be'er that he explained. Olahalon hu Omer. Now in the pasuk about the ceremony and how grisim and how evil, it says v'chasav d'alein es kol divrei Torah azois v'gomer, and it also says Ba'er heter, which would be well explained. So therefore v'asked Ba'er. So we have a gzeira shava on the word Ba'er, that just like over there on how grisim and how evil, they were supposed to set up a monument and write the Torah on them the same way in Eber HaYarden. Moshe also set up a monument and wrote the Torah on it. So you have Moshe's stones in Eber HaYarden, but Echot Shehekim Yeshua B'Secha Yarden. Then you have a second one that Yeshua set up in the Yarden. Shenemo Shtei Mesri Avonim Hekim Yeshua B'Secha Yarden. As the pasuk says, Yeshua set up 12 stones in the Yarden. And as we learned yesterday, that was, so to speak, the mezuzah of Eretz Yisrael, to mark the actual place where the Kohenim had stood when the Jewish people crossed. The Echad Shehekim by Gilgal, and then there's a third group that Yoshua set up in Gilgal, where they took stones from the Yarden and brought them to Gilgal and set them up over there. First, Rashi explains they put them up on Har Evel and built the Mizbeach out of them, and then they took them apart and we set them up permanently in Gilgal, which was the first place where they camped when they came into Eretz Yisrael.
What's the one that they put in the Yarden, right?
So these are different ones than they put in the Yarden, right? The Marshal actually explains that maybe what it means is, we do mean maybe it was the same stone, maybe after they put them in the Yarden, then they took them from there and brought them to Gilgal. So he explains that maybe we're talking about, we don't mean three different sets of stones, we mean the different stones that were set up, the stones were set up multiple times in different places. On the other hand, Marshal disagrees with that, and Tosfos actually brings that there may also be something else. The ones that were on Har Evel and the ones that were in Gilgal may actually be separate ones, and therefore would come out there were four sets of stones. Moshe's, the ones in the Yarden, the ones on Har Evel, which were left there according to that, and the ones that were set up in Gilgal. The 12 stones that they had taken from the Yarden, they set up in Gilgal. Yeshua set up in Gilgal. I guess we'll stop over here and let's continue on. It's quiet anyway. Yeah. Turn it up on. Kate said Kosvi serves a Torah. How did the Jewish people write the Torah on these stones? Now the Pesukim in Parshas Kisavai say that they have to set up these stones, they have to plaster them, they have to coat them with plaster, and they write the Torah on them. So what is it? So Rabbi Yehuda says they wrote the Torah directly on the stones. Because the pasuk says you should write on the stones. They have to write on the bare stones. And afterwards they covered the words with plaster. Because the pasuk says they have to plaster it. So Rabbi Yehuda understands, though, it doesn't mean they wrote on the plaster, it means they wrote on the stones and then they covered them with plaster. So Omalei Reb Shimon Ledvarach Hayach Lomdu Umus Shalois Azman Torah. So Reb Shimon says, according to what you're saying, how could the nations of the world learn the Torah? I mean, the whole point of writing B'Shivim Loshen, and we talked about the other day that they write the whole Torah, that they write only the Tariag Mitzvahs, whatever, but we learned earlier that they wrote it B'Shivim, we learned in the Mishnah, they wrote it B'Shivim Loshen. The whole point was that the nations should understand what the Torah is about and realize that the Jewish people have a right to be conquering out Israel, and they better pay attention. So if it's covered with plaster, how are they going to learn? Omaloi, so Rabbi Yehuda tells him, Bini Yisera Nosin Behem HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Hashem gave the Goyim of that time exceptional understanding to realize that there's something under here. V'shigru Nutirin Shalahan, they sent their scribes, just like in English, you have the word a notary, like a notary public. So it comes from a word in Greek or in Latin that means a scribe. So they sent their scribes. The kill force has said they peeled off the plaster to discover the words underneath the siuha, and they copied out the Torah. They copied out the Torah from off the stones. So Rabbi Yehuda is not bothered by the fact that it was coated with plaster, because in fact Hashem gave them the idea to realize that under the plaster there's words. The Bini Yisrael also, Ben Yehoyada points out, is they have to peel it off carefully so they don't take the ink of the word of the letters with it. Anyway, the point is, Rabbi Yehuda continues, because of this, because now they had a chance to find out that there is a Torah and there is an Eveshter, and they didn't pay attention. They continued to worship Avodah Zarah and do whatever. Because of that is why Hashem judged them that they're going to go into the bottomless pit, in other words, into Gehenna. Shahoya Lahem Lumud, because they should have at least been able to learn the Shev Mitzvah Shneinayach, the Lo Lomdu, and they didn't bother learning it. So now, in other words, without that, they could have had an excuse. We didn't know that there was a Torah, that there was a Shev Mitzvah Shneinayach. You can't fault us for not knowing. But now that they actually had those scribes copy it down and they knew what's going on, now when they didn't pay attention to it, they didn't follow it, then they deserve to be punished. Rav Shimon Omer. Now, on the other hand, Rav Shimon says, "Al gabei asid kasvua." Rav Shimon says, "No, they actually wrote the Torah on the plaster." So Rav Shimon learns: first they plastered the stones, then they wrote the Torah on top of it. So v'kosvulahan, and Rav Shimon also continues that they wrote. And this was mainly addressed to the seven nations. Specifically, Rashi says to inform any of the seven nations who are living outside Eretz Yisrael, they wrote the Kosvah and Lamata. They wrote at the bottom of the stones the pasuk Lamanashe Yolamdu Aschamlasis Kachol Begomer. You have to destroy the Goyim of Eretz Yisrael in order that they shouldn't teach you to act according to their corrupt ways. So, in other words, even though that's already part of the Torah, they wrote it on the bottom like to highlight that so everybody should realize. The point is, Rashi says, The seven nations, not every member of the seven nations lived in Eretz Yisrael. Many of them lived in other places. So they're sort of, Shimon is saying, they wanted to highlight the point. Don't think that we're just genociding you wherever you live. The reason why we're wiping out the ones in Eretz Yisrael is because they're the ones who are going to, otherwise they're going to teach us to follow their corrupt ways. But you guys who live outside Eretz Yisrael, if you want to accept the Shem Mitzvah Menayach, or you want to become Gerim, as the case may be, then we will be willing to accept you. So they wrote that in order to highlight that point. Holomata, from that you see, Shimhoyu Chorzin B'Tshuva, if those nations, even from the seven nations who live outside Eretz Yisrael, if they were to do Tshuva and accept the Shev Mitzvah Menayach, Hoyu Makabla Noisam, the Jewish people would have accepted them as Gerim Toshav. Because again, the whole point is the mitzvahs that it says in those psukim, Moshechai upon Neshama, is the goyim will live in Eretz Yisrael. There's no saving them because they're going to end up teaching the Jewish people their corrupt ways. And Rashi adds, even if they were to accept the Shev Mitzvah Neneach, they'd be doing it only out of fear, not that they sincerely mean it. And therefore, Hashem is saying that's it; they've got to be goners. Tosfos discusses over here in a little bit of detail. What about at what point are we? So Tosfos points out, what about Rachel? The Meraglim came to Rachav. She told them, as we learned before, that everybody in Eretz Yisrael is very fearful of you because of Kriyas Yamsuf, even though it's 40 years later. And the upshot is they said, we're going to save you and your family, and they ended up joining the Jewish people. If we're saying over here that the Knanim in Eretz Yisrael was supposed to be wiped out, then how do they save Rachav and company? So Tosfos discusses in some detail that there can be a difference between what happened before they started the war, conquest of Eretz Yisrael, versus afterwards. Anybody who was willing to accept to become a Ger Toshav or a Ger before they started the conquest, then that would be valid. After that, it would be too late. That's why the Givonim later on, after the war had already started, and they realized they had to play a trick on the Jewish people in order to save themselves, because otherwise, if they just came flat out and said, we want to accept the Shem that's going, then the Goyim would tell them, take the tough luck. You lost your chance. With that said, other Rishonim learn differently. Other Rishonim learn that actually what happened with the Givonim was they would have accepted them even afterwards. They want to come and accept Shem Mitzvah Nenach, then fine. The thing is, the Givonim wanted to do it in a way where they figured they're going to do it in a way where they're going to be co-equal with the Jewish people, not be subjugated to them like Ger Toshav would need to be, but rather to be fully independent. So therefore, they played this trick. And in the end, they lost out because Yeshua told them, you're going to be Chot Ve'etz and Rishoy Mimayim. So the Gemara says, Omar Rav Bar Shila, my time of Reb Shimon. Why does Reb Shimon, where does he get from? After all, Pesukim make it sound like they have to write directly on the stone, not on the plaster. So where's Reb Shimon getting that they had to write Davka on the plaster? So Dichtiv, you have a Pesuk in Yeshaya, Vahoyu Amrim Misrefoy Sid. The nations will be a burning of plaster. Plaster, you make it by burning limestone in a very hot oven. So the pasuk is using that as a metaphor for the punishment of the Rishoyim. But why dafter Sid? It means al iske Sid, because of the matter involving the plaster. In other words, because the Torah was written right there on the plaster in a way very clearly visible. It didn't even have to be according to Reb Shimon. It didn't have to be like Rabbi Yehuda, according to Rabbi Yehuda, where they had to they'd have to peel off the plaster. It's right there, written on the stones, and that they didn't bother paying attention to the Torah, so therefore they deserve to be punished in the fires of Gehenna, and therefore the pasuk uses Sid in that connection. Rav Yehuda, how would Rav Yehuda understand it, where he says that they wrote the Torah under the plaster? He says the pasuk is comparing ki Sid. Means the pasuk is comparing the punishment of the Goyim to the way that you make plaster, the way you make wine. Mas Sid ein lo takana ela b'sreifa, the same way as the only way to make plaster, the only way to make plaster, to make it good quality, is by burning it ela b'sreifa. Af oisin akusim, the same way the goyim, if they don't come to accept Shev Mitzvah Nenayach and become Geirei Toshav, a regular Geirim, Eilam Takona, Al Asreifa, the only way to fix them up is to burn them in the fire of Gehenem. So in other words, the Pasuk is comparing them to plaster because of that. So again, according to Shimon, the vote is that they should have read the Torah, which is right there on the plaster, and they didn't, and for that they're punished. According to the Yehuda, the point of comparison is the Goyim are like plaster, where the only way to make it properly is by burning it in the same way. If they don't do what they're supposed to, then the only way they can ever get their birur is by being burnt in Gehenna. So the Gemara finishes off. Kaman Ozla Hadatanya. According to which of these two opinions is what it says in a Braisa, that the pasuk is v'shavisa shivya, at the beginning of Parashas Kisetze, when you go to war against the Goyim and you capture captives from them, l'rabaskin, the word v'shavisa shivya, the double expression, means l'rabas k'nanim shivachotvaretz. It comes to include people from the K'nani nations who live in Chotvaretz. And that means even if they were captured previously by Goyim and they would have wanted to live in Eretz Yisrael, but right now they're outside Eretz Yisrael involuntarily. So Shem Chozin b'tshuva makablanoisam. If they want to do tshuva and accept Shem Mitzvah Nenayah, then we would accept them. We wouldn't kill them among all the Knanim of Eretz Yisrael. Kaman Kerub Shimon. That would be like Kerub Shimon, who said that we said before that the people of the seven nations who live outside Eretz Yisrael are not included in the category of Lois Achaya Kol Mishan. According to Rabbi Yehuda, that we wouldn't have that exception. Anyone from the seven nations, whether they're in Eretz Yisrael or outside of it, would be subject to that. Okay, so we'll continue in the Gemara tomorrow, Bas Hashem, with more of the discussion about what happened with these stones and about, in general, the conquest of Eretz Yisrael and so forth.
Yes, you're correct. So what would...